KBOO Portland. We'd like to thank everyone who has been donating during this membership drive. Don't forget, tomorrow is your last day to donate. Big thank you to Roberta and Stuart for your donations and making all of this possible.
Tune in to KBOO every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th for KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series. Join KBOO in celebrating and paying tribute to the contributions and enriching influences of Hispanic and Latinx Americans and their ancestors. You'll hear from volunteer producers from Buscando America, Boogie Pachanguero, Noticias en Español, and more. Again, that's KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series, every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th. Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archives weekly series where we get to profile some of the amazing recordings in our 55,000 program collection going back to 1949. I'm your host, Mark Torres. On this week's From the Vault, we celebrate the life of Al Jarreau, who had a connection with Pacifica beginning in 1968 that held strong until his death on February 12th, 2017. There is no one better to help weave Al Jarreau's early beginnings than Pacifica host Julio Martinez, a musician, writer, and host of KPFK's Arts and Review Theater, Music, Cabaret, and Dance program. Julio Martinez was Al Jarreau's early musical partner from 1967 to 1975. You're in for a treat with this program with special rare recordings from Julio's personal collection. So let's get right into it with Julio Martinez.
Well, I guess as a prequel, it all began in 64. That's when Al Jarreau came out from Iowa State University, where he'd just gotten a master's degree in clinical psychology, looking for work. But mainly, he wanted to see how he could expand his horizons as a singer. He was huge in his hometown of Milwaukee, and he went to Ripon College in upstate Wisconsin and on a basketball scholarship. He was good at all sports. And he was even governor of Boys State while still in high school. But he was always singing in clubs. He came from a family of eight children who all sang. His father was a Seventh-day Adventist minister. His oldest brother was a concert singer. So music ran right through his family. And he got into jazz very early, became a dedicated jazz singer, following in the John Hendricks school of singing, just really hard line, first line, straight ahead jazz. And that's what he wanted to do. In San Francisco, he got a job with the state of California as a rehabilitation psychologist and started singing at night in a small club in a predominantly African-American area. It was called the Half Note. He found this very young pianist, George Duke, who was just about 16 at the time. He had to get his mother's permission to go out there and play in the club, and he had to be home by 12:30. But he was working with George Duke, a great trio that had John Hurd, a bass player who had just come off the road with Duke Ellington, and this drummer named Al Copacino there. That would be better. And that's where they worked, and that's in that 64, 65 area. I, at the meantime, came to San Francisco in 64 out of the U.S. Army. I had been a music theory teacher in the U.S. Army Band School at Fort Ord in Monterey. During my last 6 months in the Army, they transferred me to San Francisco, and I weighed out my time looking for something to do, and I got into grad school at Berkeley. And then I got a job as the music director of the San Francisco Mime Troupe. This is all in 64. So we both started working in San Francisco. And through a series of very interesting events, we met on New Year's Eve, 1967, at the On Broadway Theater in San Francisco. I was a fledgling guitarist. I'd been playing about 2 years by then. I was looking to play in front of the public, and I was at the On-Broadway Theater as the music director of a play, and I was playing. Al Jarreau walked up, and he was looking for a pianist to sit in with. The owner of the club said, "We don't have a pianist. There's just that kid sitting up there at the guitar." So Al came. We found four songs that we knew together. We did the four songs. He said, now this was on December 30th, the day before New Year's Eve. And he said, "Look, I'm having a big party here New Year's Eve. We want you two to play." That was it. That was our first job. New Year's Eve, 1967.
Wow, that is incredible. All right, so you guys play one show together. I take it the chemistry was pretty good?
Yes, I was not a very good guitarist. When I said I played four songs, I played the four songs that I knew. But what I could do, I had gotten a degree in music. I had studied orchestration and arranging. I could find anything I wanted on the guitar. I could play in any key. I could transpose at will. And even though I didn't know what I was doing, if he said the song is written in D and he wanted to perform it in E flat, I just transposed it up a half step. And he was very impressed with that, more than the fact that I didn't play like George Benson, you know. I worked with him, and I really worked hard. By the time a month had gone by, I knew about two sets I could play with Al, about 16 tunes. So we went around auditioning, and we found this club in Sausalito called Gatsby's. It was a bar. And we auditioned. The owner of it, in his great musical knowledge, said, "You guys play great calypso. We want to have you play here." So we worked two nights a week. We opened the first week.
Now, Sausalito, for our audience members who are not from California, is across the bay from San Francisco. It is a bay community.
Yes, at that
seaside
time.
Seaside community.
It was a lower class, lower middle class seaside community. Maybe fishing. I guess the most distinctive aspect of Sausalito were the houseboats out in the bay.
Where the great Alan Watts lived.
Yes. We had the Kingston Trio. Two of them lived on houseboats or lived in Marin County, which was what Sausalito was actually part of. And they used to come into the club, and Al and I got established there. By the second night, the line was going out the door to come in. What happened was Al had gotten used to singing with a trio, with a great jazz pianist like George Duke, who could improvise. And when Al would sing a song, George Benson would improvise, and I would come in and do a Scooby-Doo kind of improvisation. They'd end the song together. But working with me, I was a six-string classical guitarist who played fingerstyle. I didn't strum. I didn't pick. I played pretty much the way a cocktail guitarist would play. I could play full chords, and I played melodies and chords together. So he found it a very good accompanying instrument, but our musical repertoire was kind of limited. I couldn't get into those really fast-driving Lambert Hendricks and Ross kind of vocals. And so I said, why don't we do other kinds of songs that work with the guitar? So he started, Al was very open to it. He started investigating the songs of James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, Carole King, and since bossa nova worked very well with guitar, we did a lot of bossa nova. So from going from a hardline jazz singer, Al became more of a pop jazz singer. And he became very, very popular. By the time we'd been working there 6 months, the four shows we did had lines going out the door and down the block. And it was Al Jarreau and Julio Martinez. And it was great. And different people came in. Finally, someone from Capitol Records came in, Bill Straw, who was the attorney for Capitol Records at the time. He was also a fledgling guitarist producer who very much wanted to produce in the old school of producing, of having purely acoustic instruments. And he loved Al and I. So he brought us down to L.A., and this is in October of 1968. And he said, I've got an audition for you set up at Dino's Lodge. which was a big club, the big club, especially for a stand-up singer, on Sunset Boulevard, right just west of La Cienega. If any of you have saw the old series 77 Sunset Strip, one of the characters, Ed Kooky Burns, was the parking lot attendant for Dino's Lodge. In the opening credits, you see him standing out there combing his hair, standing in front of that neon light sign of Dean Martin, who was co-owner of the club. So we thought, okay, we're going to come here, work at Dino's Lodge, put in our 2 weeks, that's what we were there for, and then go back home to San Francisco or find another club. What we didn't know was just how this style Al was singing, of being able to sing a song, then go into duplicating the sound of a guitar or a flute or conga drums or any kind of blues harmonica. He just learned to do all these things to add color to what we were doing. It was my job to set a tempo, a set a style, and keep the beat.
Okay, so you have this big showcase that's going to happen at Dino's Lodge on Sunset Strip. At that point, is that where you decide, we need to get some of these songs recorded, and you make your way into the KPFK studios?
Well, that
studios.
Was told to us. They said, look, there's going to be people at managers, agents, whatever. They're going to want a calling card. And the calling card would have been a cassette of your playing, two or three songs. This is before CDs, folks. There was no such thing. You gave people cassettes of your playing. So we didn't know anything about the studios in L.A. And Bill Straw said, well, you can't do it at Capitol, but a lot of people record at this place called Gold Star. That's where the Beach Boys were recording. And Phil Spector and a number of other people. And so he said, sounds good to us. So we went there. We recorded at Gold Star one recording, and we had to stop. Some other person was imposing their time. So I said, look, I used to work at KPFA Berkeley. I had a children's radio show up there. That's during my improv days, theater improv. And they said, oh, why don't you see if they have a sister station down here? Maybe we can record down there. So I called up there. They introduced me to KPFK here and gave me the phone number of an engineer. He said, come in. And over about an hour and a half of lazy recording here at studio, we recorded the rest of the album.
Seems I'm hoping for a heartache. I can feel it in the air. I'm in love with lovely feelings, and they come from everywhere. Well, moods like this, they just don't happen. I'm the kind who never cares. And it seems to me I've been so heartless to those with feelings I've never shared. Well, just what is this strange new feeling that possesses me this way? There's not one around I've cared for in this place up to date. Thank you.
this strange new feeling that possesses me this way. There's not one around I've cared for in this place of today. Things I've known in the past make me feel out of place. Bright illusions growing dim. Love not then, love not here, no.
Love Not Now, performed by Al Jarreau and Julio Martinez, recorded at Pacifica Radio KPFK Studio A in the fall of 1968.
Well, in keeping with Al Jarreau's change of venue, I think A Day in the Life, which was the Lennon-McCartney tune.
Fixing a hole where the rain comes in, pours in. I heard the news today, oh boy. The man, you know, he made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, I really had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. Poor man didn't notice that the lights changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before, but nobody was really sure if he was from the House of Lords. Parliament. I saw a film today, oh boy. The English army had just won the war. Boom, 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 boom. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look, having read. Won't turn you on. Woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head. Baby made my way downstairs and drank a cup. Then looking up, I noticed I was late to grab my coat, grab my hat. Beat it to the bus in seconds flat. I found my way upstairs and had a smoke. And then somebody spoke and I fell into a dream. Into a dream, into a dream, into a dream.
You're listening to the Pacifica Radio Archive's celebration of Al Jarreau on our weekly program, From the Vault. To get a copy of this program, go to pacificaradioarchives.org or call us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230. That was the Beatles' Lennon and McCartney, A Day in the Life, performed by Al Jarreau and Julio Martinez in the fall of 1968, recorded at the Pacifica Radio KPFK Studio A in Los Angeles. Here's Better Than Anything, performed by Al Jarreau and Julio Martinez in the Pacifica Radio Studio A of KPFK Los Angeles in the fall of 1968.
Better than sailing at midnight, better than diving for pearls, better than skiing at Aspen, better than feeding the squirrels, better than finding a horseshoe, better than losing your head, better than anything thought of, better than anything said, better than singing right out loud or being spotted in a crowd, better than anything except being in love. Being in love. Better than four sets of Dizzy, better than Count Basie's band, better than Rollins and Coltrane, better than being on the stand, better than Ella Fitzgerald, better than Miles' latest news, better than Bill Evans' ballads, better than Joe Williams' blues, better than hearing Lady Day or checking in at Monterey, better than anything except being in love. Being in love. Better than Lucy and Desi, better than Route 66, better than Huntley and Brinkley, better than quiz shows all fixed, better than Kildare and Casey, better than singing with Mitch, better than Hitchcock and Karloff, better than clicking the switch, better than movies late at night or watching Emil Griffith fight, better than anything except being in love. Talking about being in love. Better than elephants dancing, better than clowns on parade, better than peanuts and popcorn, better than fresh lemonade, better than rides on the midway, better than seals blowing horns, better than men shot from cannons, better than fresh ears of corn, better than balancing on wire or watching tigers leap through fire, better than anything except being in love. Talking about being in love. Better than singing right out loud or being spotted in a crowd, better than anything except being in love. Better than balancing on wire or watching tigers jump through fire, better than anything except being in love. Better than hearing Lady Day or checking in at Monterey, better than anything except being in love. Better than hearing Lady Day digging Monterey, anything except being in love. I'm old Smiles, darling, you'd be too. If you knew, darling, all of the smiles were for you.
You are listening to the Pacifica Radio Archive's celebration of Al Jarreau on our weekly program, From the Vault.
But my cold hands, darling, warm to the touch of you,
Rain hasn't fallen for days now, but rainbows are filling the skies. My heart must have painted those rainbows shining before my eyes. Can't you tell that I'm in love, darling, deep and true with guess who, darling? Someone I'd die for, eat humble pie for, someone I'd cry for, someone to fly to the sun, moon, and sky for, someone to laugh with, to love with, to lie for, and that someone is you, you ba doo doo ba doo ba doo ba, you ba doo doo ba doo ba doo ba, you ba doo doo ba doo ba doo ba doo. But you and you alone can make me happy. You and you alone will ever love me. You and you alone can thrill me like you do. You do, you do, you do. Better than sailing at midnight, diving for pearls, skiing at aspen, feeding the squirrels, finding a horseshoe, losing your head. Anything ever thought of, anything ever said.
That was Better Than Anything, performed by Al Jarreau and Julio Martinez in the Pacifica Radio Studio A of KPFK Los Angeles in the fall of 1968.
And then She's a Carioca, which is the last one, which is our bossa situation. Also, She's a Carioca runs about 8 minutes because Al said, if I'm going to do this and this is my last tune, I'm going to put in every vocal technique I do. And he did. And I just kept keeping those chord changes going. My hand felt like it was going to fall off by the time it was over.
Here she comes. Here she comes. Here she comes. Here she comes. She's a carioca, Ella Carioca. Just see the way she walks. Nobody else could be what she is to me. I look and what do I see? When I look deep in her eyes, I can see the sea, a forgotten road, the caressing skies. Boom, boom, boom. And not only that, I'm in love with her the most exciting way. It's written on my lips where her kisses stay. She smiles and all of a sudden the world is smiling for me. And you know what else? She's a carioca, Ella Carioca. Bam 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 dum bam dum bam 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 bam. Here she comes, here she comes.
Do 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 do
To the Pacifica Radio Archives celebration of Al Jarreau on our weekly program From the Vault. To get a copy of this program, go to pacificaradioarchives.org or call us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230. Classic Antonio Carlos Jobim song, She's a Carioca, performed by Al Jarreau and Julio Martinez in the Pacifica Radio Studio A of KPFK Los Angeles in the fall of 1968. So how did it go at that big showcase at Dino's Lodge?
Well, that was amazing because it was the same situation. By the end of our first week, they had extended us another 2 weeks. Because Al was bringing in all these Hollywood people. Peggy Lee and Peggy Lee's management. Peggy Lee's son-in-law took a look at us and said, you know, I think Al would be perfect for Peggy Fleming's professional debut. Peggy Fleming, the 1968 Olympic ice skating star, was about to make her professional debut at Madison Square Garden, which was being filmed by NBC. The only problem with Peggy Fleming is she was a very poetic ballet-like skater. She had never skated in rhythm, anything. And they wanted to show that she could skate in rhythm. Well, they optioned the Stevie Wonder tune for Once in My Life. They couldn't get Stevie Wonder to sing it, so they said, why don't Al and I do it and record it, and then they would fill it orchestrations around it for her to do. So we did that. Then we went down to this little ice skating rink in Santa Monica. We were there at midnight, I think, and there was Peggy Fleming, her choreographer, and the music director. And we were watching her fall down. She was trying to skate in rhythm, and it just wasn't working. She would come to a track, and she would fall down. And I said, I don't know if this is going to work. But Peggy Fleming is the Olympic champion because she's the Olympic champion. And when we finally saw it, which was aired over the holidays in 1969, she hit it perfectly. So we generated around LA for about a year after that. We worked at Whitting Hills, just Al and I, which was a small dinner house on Vermont, just west of Woodman Avenue. It was owned by Dick Whitting Hill, the disc jockey, big disc jockey at that time. And Al and I sat at a piano bar. I sat behind the piano in a guitar chair. And we did the stuff we did at the Blah Blah, plus some more modern stuff because it's a whole different audience in Sherman Oaks than it was in Sausalito. And we developed more material. And that's when Jackie Gale came back to us and said, look, they're interested in, Playboy's interested in you doing the circuit. You want to go from here to Chicago to New York and beyond? And we said, okay. And we did that. And that's when Al and I got very tight. We developed lots of songs, but we had more than enough material because the ethic of the show was that the singer did 20 minutes, and then the headliner was always a comedian who did 40 minutes, and that was the show. We did two shows Tuesday through Thursday, three shows on Friday, four shows on Saturday. And then the Sunday, I think it was just two shows.
Did they pay well?
Not too well. No, we actually, the best paying job we had was Gatsby's in Sausalito. But we played there four nights a week. And we were getting actually about $450 each.
Whoa.
Which was good money back in 1968, 69.
It's great money.
Yeah.
Now, here we are in December of 1970, and the dynamic duo of Al Jarreau and Julio Martinez has now expanded to a larger group. How did that take place?
Well, Al and I did the Playboy circuit for a year and a half. And then our manager at that time, his name was Shelley Jacobs, was part of this Millionaire Boys Club of Minneapolis. His parents owned NBC, which was the Northwest Bag Corporation. And he was very good friends with the Finger Hut boy, who had the big online, well, before online, it was a mailing distribution house for goods. And the younger Finger Hut had opened up a nightclub converted from a railroad depot. It was called The Depot. And he was looking for acts, and Shelley said, why don't you guys get off the Playboy thing and start working clubs, because that's where I would like to book you. You know, because rock clubs were getting very big. The San Francisco Sound People, the Jefferson Airplane, the Grateful Dead were now expanding and working clubs all over the country. Moby Grape, Three Dog Night, Steppenwolf. And he wanted to get us on that circuit. So Al and I went to Minneapolis to do that, to play at the club. And when we went down there to rehearse, there was a band in there who came in with like two trucks of amplifiers and got all set up. And I walked in with my guitar in one hand and an amp in the other hand. And they said, what is that? And they said, this is the group. And the Finger Hut had a short talk with Shelley Jacobs. They said, no, man, you have to expand. You guys might sound great, but people want to hear the full complement. So we said, we don't know anybody here. And he said, well, I do. So he put us together with two San Francisco studio musicians, Dick Hedlund, the bass player, Dick Bortolussi, drummer, this amazing young pianist named Richard Dworsky, Jr., who now is the music director for Prairie Home Companion. Back then, he was a 16-year-old genius who got to start playing with the Minneapolis Children's Theater. And then this great young former classical flamenco guitarist named Richard Kinky Schnitzer on lead guitar. And we became Giro. And we went into a studio, again, to have some kind of calling card. Al wrote five songs, one of them with Richard Dworsky. And we formed a kind of new sound. It was, my classical guitar was in there, interwoven with the lead guitar of Kinky and the amazing piano of Richard Dworsky.
And it's so hard.
Close to mine for that point.
That was Lovely Lady Light Up, recorded on December 16th, 1970. We're in studio with Julio Martinez, who began his travels with Al Jarreau back in 1967, and we're hearing a tale of those early days, which takes us now to 1970 in Minnesota, where the group Jarreau has now formed. They moved out of the duo and into a band. And where does the band go from here?
Well, we did a couple of local jobs, and then we decided to enter this MEMC convention. That's a Music Educators National Conference or whatever. And it was at in North Dakota. And we had to drive over there. And there was a whole series of bands and groups. I mean, everyone auditioned for it. George Carlin auditioned. We ended up being his opening act on one of these concerts. And you even had the Count Basie band auditioning for these things to get college concert gigs. That's the way it was done. And we were hired to be an official opening act for a named group. And the first time we were an opening act, we were the opening act for Steppenwolf.
That's incredible.
Up in Winnipeg, Canada. And that went on. We opened for a number of groups like that. And then the band got antsy. The bass player and the drummer were really very active studio musicians in Minneapolis. They sometimes couldn't make the jobs. So Al and I reverted back to our duo on a couple of things. But one of the jobs we did work as a full band was up in northern Minnesota. The rest of the band flew up there. And Al and I had to drive the truck at 90 miles from Minneapolis straight north, almost to the border of Canada. And it was a small college there. And on the way, we're driving, and we get about 20 miles from the college, and Al says, "I'm hungry." And I said, "Well, we have two tuna sandwiches." And he's looking around, "Where are they?" I said, "In the back with the gear," which means we'd have to stop the truck, get out, go to the back, open it up, get the gearbox out, get the sandwiches out. And he said, "Well, I'm hungry. I want to have one." So we pull over. I get out my side, he gets out his side, we go back, I get the sandwiches, I walk back to the truck, and sitting in the passenger seat is a bobcat, a very large bobcat. And it had a scar on its cheek. And so I said, "Well, we're going to either freeze the death out here, or you're going to get the bobcat out." And he said, "I don't know how to get the bobcat out." So we thought about it for a while. So I literally took the sandwich out, waved it from the bobcat. For the first time, he got interested. He kind of looked at me. I threw it over his head, and he jumped out for it. Al jumped in, and I jumped in, and off we went. And then he said, "Now we have nothing to eat." So we drove to the town. We stop at a diner, and we go in, and the guy says, "How's you doing?" And I tell the waitress about my experience out in the road, and she's listening to me. She said, "Oh my God, you met Big Tom." And then she starts yelling to the cook, "Hey, these guys met Big Tom out in the road. He was in their truck." And everyone starts talking about this very legendary bobcat. And Al said, "Well, celebrities, where you find it?" And we drove and did the concert.
Something No Indiana funky old hamstring. No, no, no. Just move on up, help someone else up too. Hey, well, you might find out there's someone to be like you. And I'm saying we got something to do. Shona, if we stay here. And time, yes, time changes things. Rages things, you know. Can I tell you that I got a date to keep? I got a man to see, and maybe later on I'll be free. Yes, in the morning I'll be free. Oh, every evening I'll be free. And if you know me in every way now, I'll be free on every day now. Ow, 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 ow. Walk it down now. Ow, 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 ow. Walk it down now. Got something to say, yeah. We don't hide behind tomorrow's another day, yeah. Just move on up, help someone else up too. Did you know what you might find out someone to be like you? I'm saying we got something to lose. Show now if you stay here.
That was the Al Jarreau original, Something to Lose, recorded on December 16th, 1970. Why don't we skip forward to the moment where you and Al part ways?
What happened is Al and I were doing these concerts. In fact, it was the Winnipeg concert with Steppenwolf that really got it going for us, because the manager who booked us in it had said, and after this, we have a whole series of concerts for you, which is going to lead back to you working at the big venue in L.A., which there was no downtown venues then. It was the Forum. I told my then wife about it, and she called me and said, I've got this calendar schedule of events coming up. There's no listing of you guys working at the Forum. So I did a little checking, and everything was phony. You know, we had no bookings beyond this. And Al Jarreau told me, he said, you know, I'm getting tired of splitting $500 and I want to be making the $10,000. So we figured out the best thing we could do is stop everything we were doing and come to L.A., try to find a club to work in where people could hear Al do original music, his own music, because everything we were doing was written by somebody else at that time. So that's what we did. We came to L.A., back to L.A. in 72. I was at the tail end of my marriage at that time, and Al was totally free. He and his wife had split when he left San Francisco. So we looked around for a place to play, and I went into this guitar shop, Arturo's Guitar Shop on Santa Monica, and this guy came up to me. He said, are you the guy who works with that singer who does all the shooby dooby dooby stuff? And I said, yeah. And he said, I heard you at a set you sat in. You guys are really good. And he asked me what I was doing, and I said, I'm looking for a club where we can do our own music. And he says, I'm working a club like that. It's in Studio City. It's called the Blah Blah Cafe. why don't you come down and give it a try? So we went down there, we auditioned, and within 1 week we were playing every Friday and Saturday night. And that's where Al honed his own music. That's where the original sound of Al Jarreau started. Then we worked other clubs. We went and every summer we would do 2 weeks or 3 weeks at Gatsby's, come back. We worked at the Scotch and Sirloin, which had two restaurants, one at Sepulveda and Pico and Sepulveda, and the other one in Calabasas. We worked the Bitter End West, which was on Santa Monica Boulevard, and any club that would hire us. We even worked at El Cholo, playing in the lounge. And then I started playing solo guitar a lot. There was a cafe underneath the general store in the Cafe Gallery in Laurel Canyon. Still there. It's gone through different names. And every Wednesday and Thursday night, I would sit and play musical wallpaper while the people ate their spaghetti. I played right through then Secretary of State Jerry Brown planning his governor's campaign. And occasionally his girlfriend, Linda Ronstadt, would come sit in the stool next to me and sing American Standards.
Oh, my goodness. That is absolutely a dream, living a dream.
And that went on till 75. And then at the beginning of 75, our then manager, which was named Tom Canning, started saying, you know, Al, the type of material you're doing really lends itself to a pianist. So why don't you start working with Julio on your club dates and with a pianist on developing new material? So Al did that. And by March, he had set up Al to do the opening act to Les McCann at the Troubadour. And Al opened for Les. Warner Brothers were there. They signed Al. By April, we were that same month, March 1975, a friend of mine, an actor, Al Alou, said there's a new federally funded theater company started under the Theater Arts Program Los Angeles, the TAPLA. It's called under CETA, Comprehensive Employment Training Act, and said they're looking for people. You would be perfect, both from your music background, your improv theater background. Why don't you give it a try? So I auditioned, I became the music director, and then in 2 months I became the director of the company. And for the next 4 years, that's what I did. And during the next 4 years, Al became a superstar.
Well, Julio Martinez, thank you so much. Any last thoughts on your time with Al Jarreau or Al Jarreau as an artist?
Well, I got the call on Sunday morning from Maggie LaPeak from here at KPFK.
Music director here.
And she had gotten notified by Al's manager that Al had died at 5:30 in the morning in the hospital out in the West Valley area. His wife and son were with him, his wife Susan, who had been the dishwasher when she was 18 years old at the Blah Blah Cafe. That's where they had met. And I just realized that I had to go about my day, but it's been sad, and I've gotten some lovely emails from people who knew us back then. A lot of these people have stayed friends with me over the years, and it's great. The legacy does go on, and musical memories are wonderful.
That does it for this week's edition of From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archives. Special thanks to Julio Martinez for sharing his Al Jarreau recordings and his personal insight into the great and now late Al Jarreau. To get a copy of this program, go to pacificaradioarchives.org or call us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230. I'm Mark Torres. Thank you for helping keep our history alive.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy viernes 15 de octubre del 2021. se han recuperado y sobrevivido al COVID-19 más de 217.384.000 personas en todo el mundo, en Estados Unidos más de 35.107.000, en Brasil más de 20.740.000, en Argentina más de 5.135.000, en Colombia más de 4.000.